We are also in Annagry tomorrow. This show is in Annagry tomorrow. So it's the regular show, by the way, that you have come to know and hopefully love. But of course, with a focus on Annagry and the people of Annagry and that surrounding area. If there's anything you think we should be talking about or a person you believe we should be talking to around Annagry, we've got a full show lined up already. Don't get me wrong. But if you're in the Annagry area, around that area, and you have a little bit of nitbit of information or something that's particularly interesting about that area, and there is tons of stuff and we have most of it, let us know. 086 60 25,000. We are going to Annagry tomorrow with the 9 till noon show. We're going back to Letterkenny now. Mary Lee joins us on the programme. Mary Lee, lovely to speak to you. Thanks for your time.
Hello, good morning, Craig.
Right, you're talking about road markings specific to the hospital, I think. And this is something that, you know, this is not just something you've rang us about. This is something that's been on your mind for quite some time. So just for, I suppose, for people not aware, what is the concern that you have?
Yes, well, Greg, I have been in Letterkenny for a number of years, 11, and I have brought this to attention so many times, and even to yourself on the station. Just the new department of A&E, like, it's a disgrace. You enter the premises there and from the main road, and there's no yellow box. Like, they're there today, and they're relining roads that have already done. There's money being spent elsewhere when something that like that is vitally important, and it has not been flagged up yet. You know, how long does it take for something like that, for the case of an ambulance service emergency coming in and out of the hospital? And you can see there in yourself in the morning, traffic, you can see yourself, I'm actually stuck in the evening. Mm-hmm. I actually had to stop one day myself and let an ambulance come out because literally cars was just have bad manners, basically.
Yep. So they're bumper to bumper.
They don't know where that's going. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. The bumper to bumper, perhaps coming down from the roundabout, yeah, or wherever it might be, and they're sitting, blocking that. And even in the case of an ambulance with the blue lights coming on and what have you, cars can be so close together, it can be hard to clear that space.
Yeah. And like, it's a disgrace at this day and age. A new building there. And as I say, I have flagged this up so many times and not yet hasn't been done about, even last year. Now, that's over a year ago, just as an example. And it's a disgrace. We have town councillors out there, this, that, non, building premises, doing this, doing that, memorials, you know what I mean, plaques going up, when this is something that's very important in Letterkenny. And yet, nothing has been done about it.
I presume this is it's going to be a TII job. You know, I mean, I don't think the council can do this. I think Transport Infrastructure Ireland are responsible for that. But anyway, listen, it's not about the who's responsible game. At the very least, those you've raised it with should be raising it with the TII and outlining the concerns you have. It sounds logical. I don't see any disadvantage in putting a yellow box there. I can only see an advantage that ambulances can get in and out unobstructed.
Yeah. You know, we don't know at any stage, you know, where that circumstances of our own lives or family or loved ones are going to be in that situation. And like, yet people are not even coming up to that junction. If they're in traffic, even the box isn't there. Leave the entrance.
Yeah. Clear. Did you say too?
You have plenty of room.
People may not know that that is the ED entrance either too. You know, you do have to help
the public.
Yeah,
and it's actually a disgrace, Lindy, just to Greg, in relation to that. There's not even a, like, if you were a stranger in Letterkenny, there's small fines to give you an indication of where the A&E department is. You see this big hospital, you take it yourself in a strange area, there's not even a fishing sign there to indicate exactly that this is an A&E department. Like, it's a disgrace at this day and age. The money that's been spent on a new building and everything else, but yet the access to it is a disgrace.
Yeah, it's basic stuff. Like, it's not rocket science we're talking, to use that old phrase. All right, Mary Lee, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. It's a simple one. Is it something you've noticed? Obviously, Mary Lee has. She's raised it on numerous occasions. But still, no yellow box at the entrance of the ED, as I would have thought it would be standard practice. But anyway, clearly not. Any views on that, you know the text number. In relation to plastic bottle returns, says a listener, my complaint is that up to a quarter of mine are rejected by the machine. I buy them all in just one shop and look after them all with the same care. The problem is I've already paid the deposit on the rejected ones. That comes in from Bridget. Bridget, I presume there is the recycle, there is the recycle marker on the bottle. I was in a shop recently and bought a couple of bottles of stuff And they didn't have the fancy caps, whatever way you could describe them. And also they didn't have the Recycle logo on them. So the machine can't read them. So I'm just wondering, Bridget, if maybe you're in a shop where you're getting some old stock that doesn't have the proper barcodes that might be required. Then the question is, should you be charged, of course? But anyway, let us know. I'm going to read a few more comments and then I'm going to take a break, right? But what we're going to talk about on Wellness Wednesday is something a little bit different, and that is pet bereavement. And it's not talked about very much, you know, and for many people, the loss of a loved pet, be it a dog or a cat or whatever it might be, can just feel the same as the loss of a relative. And maybe you've gone through that, or you're dealing with that, or you have grief and you're wondering, well, am I on my own? Is it right for me to feel like a member of an actual human member of the family has died because our pet has died? Maybe you've got an experience of that you want to share with us. Get in touch with us right now, because Dawn Murray, a founder of Living with Pet Bereavement, joins us now. So maybe there's some questions that you have, or maybe even it is about you not feeling like you're the only one or there's something wrong with you. Do you get where I'm coming from? But if you want to talk about that, 086 60 25,000. Have you dealt with pet bereavement? Are you living with pet bereavement? Let me know, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. A caller says, Trent to Churchill Road blocked for the past couple of months and people are having to travel on back roads. It's ridiculous to block a main road for that long with no updates. I wasn't aware of that. Morning, Greg. I was listening to a community activist from Coolock in Dublin who said there was no community engagement by the government, who were putting 500 asylum seekers into a building which they say could have housed the Irish homeless. Thank you. Indeed. And then the government say, well, we are engaging. But are they engaging with the wider community? There's no point the government speaking to local groups or organisations or NGOs who are in favour of refugees being housed there. The government has to make sure they're speaking to people who have concerns as well and addressing those concerns. You're not going to meet all of those concerns, but you also have to make sure that you're speaking to the whole community and not just those that are working with you and agree with you. And I think I would love to do a little bit more digging into who they're actually speaking to on the ground. Is it local integration people, NGOs, whatever it might be? It needs to be the wider community. We were talking about a listener who priced two nights for a hotel in Dublin for €1,400. They were going down to see Coldplay. They said, hello, are you having a laugh? Instead, they spent €1,500 and booked five nights in Abu Dhabi, bed and breakfast, five-star hotel. A caller says, hi, Greg, my son was quoted €3,900 for seven nights in Castlebar for six children and two adults. €3,900. Castlebar's lovely. Don't get me wrong. Never been there, really, on holidays. I know it. I know people that go there and they love it. But €3,900 for seven nights. Are you having a giggle? That is crazy. What kind of a holiday would you get for €4,000 for six children and two adults out foreign? It would be massive. Time for our regular feature, Wellness Wednesday. And we're going to talk about pet bereavement, because the death of a cherished pet, most likely a dog or a cat, I think, can be just as devastating as the loss of a relative that only pet lovers listening will understand. Dawn Murray is founder of Living with Pet Bereavement and joins me now. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you for having me on.
Is it something we struggle with a little bit, in that maybe even some people feel guilty or don't understand why this loss, you know, maybe feels even more so than the loss of a parent or something? I just wondered, sometimes do people struggle with working through the emotions of pet bereavement?
Yes, I think for everybody, myself included, that we tend to underestimate just how devastating and the impact that the loss of a companion animal have, because they bring so much to our lives. With pet bereavement, there's guilt really plays an enormous part of trying to work through the process. And that is from somebody who's perhaps having to make the decision to euthanize a companion animal. And then, of course, they then have to go through with the entire process. So that adds more pressure onto them. And then afterwards, a lot of guilt because they did euthanize their pet. Or perhaps if a pet has died by accident, you know, they run through all the wonder what I could have done to have prevented this. So guilt plays an enormous part. And also, as you touched on there, that people compare how they feel when a pet dies in comparison to how they feel when a relative had died, or a friend or a colleague. And most of them come to the conclusion that the emotions that they experienced through the loss of their own companion far exceeded the loss of even very close relatives.
And also, too, it's how those around us react. I think we can all put ourselves in the emotional space of losing a loved one, a human being. We might have some understanding that, and everyone deals with that differently. But I think in terms of the loss of a pet, and we see in other areas of loss, which I won't reference because people might feel I'm conflating them, but whereby if you're not an animal lover, you might not get why someone feels so emotional about it. And you think, are they right in the head? What's wrong with them? Or even you could be an animal lover, but you can compartmentalize it and you see it as a different way and what have you. So I think maybe, and you can you're the expert in this regard, I think maybe sometimes if you are going through pet bereavement, it can feel quite isolated or isolated, you know, and maybe even something you might not be want to talk to about, like you might the death of a human, because are you going to be judged? Are you going to be, sure, it's only a pet?
Yes, sadly, pet bereavement does come under the banner of disenfranchised grief, which means not everybody is going to understand it and not all of society is going to accept or acknowledge that as something that, you know, somebody is going to grieve to any great degree over. And that's fine. It's not everybody that's an animal lover, and I understand that. I mean, my own mum didn't like cats at all, and she would have been horrified coming into my house to find six of them sitting there. So that's okay, and I understand why people don't understand it. But also, I think people do become very isolated because of that fear, the fear that they're going to be judged by others because they, you know, they are grieving the loss. And not only that, it's the length of time. Of course, everybody's different. Nobody, no two people grieve the same. But quite often, the length of time that somebody's grieving doesn't sit comfortably with others.
And we have statistics in relation to that, don't we? Nearly half of bereaved owners were still mourning 2 months after their loss, and 16%, that's not insignificant, were still struggling with bereavement a year on. Again, I think even maybe we can move another cohort into the equation here who might understand the grief but may not understand why it's so prolonged.
Yes, I mean, I was speaking to a lady yesterday, and she's 3 weeks since her dog died, and already friends and family have started becoming quite concerned that she's still grieving the loss. And I've certainly spoken to other people over the years, and we're going into 5 and 10 years, that they weren't able to come to terms with the loss because they kept it to themselves and they very much isolated themselves from any support that was available.
Yeah, and of course then people might say to them almost immediately, are you going to get another cat? Are you going to get another dog? Because, you know, you like the company. They liked the company of their loved pet that they may have had for, you know, 8 to 15 years or whatever. You just don't switch that out. They may well get it, but it might be seen as an insensitive thing to say in the immediate aftermath.
Yes, it tends to be. And most people who have shared their lives with a companion animal, when that companion animal dies, their thoughts do quite quickly, you know, go towards looking for another companion. Of course, when, you know, obviously when they sort of do that, they feel, again, that's another aspect of the guilt coming in. But it's not to replace that companion that has died. It's a whole new relationship. And going into as a new relationship that you're starting to build is a healthy thing to do.
Yeah, because I sort of said before welcoming you on to the show as well, like, I think this item is as important to sort of let people know who are probably feel there's something wrong with them, that they're feeling this sense of loss, that they're not on their own, that many, many people feel the same. And in fact, a quarter of people surveyed found their pet's death as difficult as the death of a family member. And as I say, you know, those who are going through that grieving process right now might have thought, is there something wrong with me? Am I emotional damaged? Why am I so upset about this dog? Now, lots of people will get it, but I think it's well worthwhile for them people to hear, Dawn, that it is normal and lots of people go through the same process.
It is. It's perfectly normal. And, you know, it's always easy enough for, you know, a counsellor or support worker to reassure someone and to validate But certainly from my own point of view, you know, I've lost over 25 of my own cats and dogs in the past 15 years. So I very much understand the process and how that feels. And you do at times feel you're going mad. You do at times feel that you're never going to recover. You know, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. Sometimes when you're waking up in the morning, you just think, I can't go through another day. So it can make you feel like you're absolutely going mad.
Yeah, and of course, you are the founder of Living with Pet Bereavement, but just more generally, for the purpose of this conversation, it's like any bereavement, any grief. It's all different for all different people, and everyone deals with it in different ways. But are there any, you know, bits of advice that you can share that can generally help?
Well, I think basically that, you know, that we have to look at accepting our loss first of all, and sort of being kind to ourselves to make sure we're looking after ourselves. Now that is in the physical sense, you know, sleeping, eating, getting out in the fresh air, sort of looking after our overall well-being, looking after our emotional, so accepting it and processing our loss, reaching out for help, speaking to the right people, you know, because, and I think above all, people have to be very patient with themselves and not trying to rush through grief. Take it as it comes, and there will be good days and bad days, but take the good days as they come, and process the bad days with that extra support.
Yeah, and I have owned dogs, but when one of the dogs that I owned was the quality of life was such that the vet recommended that the dog was euthanized. I was okay with that because with the way I process things, I thought it was better than the dog suffering and what have you, and that's fine. I didn't really actually consider, because I haven't really thought about it, but you referenced it a little earlier on, that it can be very difficult for people to make that decision, that they can't sort of go, it's for the best, or it feels like they're interfering really in God's plan or whatever it might be, depending on their religious beliefs.
Yes, I mean, hardly a day passes that one of my clients doesn't say to me that they feel like they killed their pet. They remember the way their pet looked at them in those last few seconds of the pet's life because they opted for euthanasia. And it's very difficult to then come to terms with the fact that you actually saved the pet in the majority of cases. You know, it's to save them suffering, it's to save them going downhill, and because quite a lot of dogs and cats can go downhill very rapidly, and we have that option to prevent suffering for them. But to come to terms with that you have actually gone through that process, receiving the pet from suffering and your conscience is two different things, and it can be quite a battle at times for people to come to terms with their choice.
All right, okay. So you have resources that people can avail of. How do they access them, Dawn?
Well, as you said, yes, I'm a founder of Living with Pet Bereavement, and we have a website, livingwithpetbereavement.com. There is also the Association of Pet Bereavement Counsellors, which I recently founded, and the counsellors now that we have access to is phenomenal. We have counsellors, psychotherapists, people who have a lot of experience in pet bereavement are there to offer their support.
Okay, listen, lovely stuff, Dawn. Thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourself. That's Dawn Murray, founder of Living with Pet Bereavement. And I suppose too, your relationship with a pet can be far less complicated and feel more loving because, of course, a pet gives you unconditional love, don't they? There's no edges to it. You don't scribble and squabble necessarily in any serious way. Apologies, the sound wasn't fantastic with Dawn there. It kind of was, as much as I found it interesting, was annoying me. So hopefully you heard the message and it came through just as well as it possibly could have there. Staying with pets, an awful story about the puppies, quite a public outcry, and rightly so. I've just read figures released by the HSC, 250 abortions in Donegal last year. Where is the outcry about these babies' bodies being disposed of? Too awful to say out loud. What has humanity come to? No matter how, and I understand where people who are opposed to abortion come from, but no matter how hard it actually would put people off, I think, and I understand exactly why you do it, and it happens all the time, where people try and compare that to other things. People, it doesn't work. I think it's counterintuitive for the people trying to make the argument. I understand exactly why you do it or people do it, but it's not. It will not work because it puts people off, because people kind of have potentially made up their mind in relation to it. And if they haven't and they might change their mind, that's not the type of argument that is going to work, to be honest with you, because people view it all in different ways. But I respect your view. I've read it out there. Hi, just a quick comment. I've no problem at all with visitors coming into our area. However, I do have an issue with visitors who take their dogs to the beach and don't have them on a lead. Twice on Sunday, the same dog came over to where we were with young children and it obviously scared them. Really, the penny to dock certain limited number of dog owners really isn't dropping. We don't know your dogs. We don't like your dogs. We don't care for your dogs. We don't want them near us. We don't want them jumping up on us. We don't want them jumping up on our toddlers. We don't want them running past us with their tongue and teeth hanging out. They're your dogs. You love them, but please keep them to yourselves. We don't know them. We don't love them. They're not ours. Greg, when is work on McGrory's Brae supposed to be completed? Good question. Very good question. I'll try and find that out for you. A little 10-year-old girl was bitten by a dog last week. It wasn't small. It was a good bite. She was from France and up at my house. They went to a surgery and were told that there were no doctors available and to go to Letterkenny at 5:15. They weren't even looked at. They went to another surgery in the town where they took her in it and gave her a booster and antibiotic. But the first place's service was awful. And I wonder, is that sort of carefully worded around sort of maybe public and private? I'm not really quite sure. It feels like it is. I was wondering what people's opinions on smart meters. Can you refuse to have it installed? Yes, you can. The problem is eventually, I've said this before, eventually they'll become defunct and you might not get it replaced for free. It might not long be serviced anymore. That's the argument they say. There's a momentum in relation to their installment that it's not going to be reversed. Everyone in the future is going to have a smart meter, whether we like it or not. There are some people holding out. Maybe if there's a problem, they might have to pay to get the new meter in. The old meters are no longer going to be available or serviced or have parts available for them. So it's going to happen. It's just whether you want it to happen for you now or not. I'm not here promoting them. I'm just saying, look, there's no point saying otherwise. But at the moment, you can refuse a smart meter. But a good question. You know, like, a lot of people have been living with a smart meter now for a year or so, or maybe even longer. I can't remember. It'd be interesting, bit of public service assistance. How has life been with the smart meter? I find the way we're charged for electricity so convoluted. It's hard to know if you're making a saving or not because the prices are up and down. It doesn't make any sense and so on and so forth. But anyway, what's your life like with a smart meter a few years on? 086 60 25,000. It'd be really interesting to share. Right, Fiona's with me now. Hiya, Fiona.
Hi, hello.
We were chatting to Dawn there and talking about pet bereavement. And is this something that sort of landed with you, Fiona?
It has indeed. I've always had dogs in my life and had rescue dogs right through from whatever age they were when I've got them. And they've always been with me. So I've taken them right. One in particular I had for 14 years. And I actually rescued him in England. And he's travelled with me wherever I've went to, from country to country. So he's been, like, really, in a way, like a loyal companion the whole way. So I had one experience when I actually arrived in Ireland and at my work with a 14-year-old who was actually a Westie called Smokey, who had to be put to sleep. Mm-hmm. And when I rang my manager in a really distressed state because he'd been with me from a puppy, I'd taken him from a rescue farm, and my manager's response was, oh, you'll only need an hour, take him to the vet and you'll be fine.
Back to work.
Come back to work. And at the time, I was so grief-stricken, and he was being loyal to the poor little thing and needed me at most. I was distressed at letting go of him, just the same as probably somebody with a child would feel the same way. But it was just so hard, and no empathy or sympathy from anybody was from where I work. It was just a dog, as they regarded it.
How deeply did you feel the grief, Fiona? I mean, and I'm not putting you in a position where you have to compare it compare that grief to the loss of a human, if you know what I mean. But as much as you're comfortable about, like, how deeply did you feel it, and could you equate it to the loss of someone, a person that you knew?
I could equate it to, you know, I suppose it's not the same as losing a child. I'm not a parent, I haven't experienced that. But to me, it was so distressing. You get to know a dog very well, you bond with them, they have their little ways, their little individual ways, and then you suddenly come home, he's not there, you've got his collar, you've got all the reminders. And it's equally as distressing and upsetting. And I think a lot of times people can appreciate the level of the bond between the owner and the dog. And a lot of times we hear about neglect stories, but we don't often celebrate the joy the dogs bring us. Mm-hmm. And people don't often get that.
And just in your circle, did people get it? Do you know what I mean? Obviously, there was an employer there who simply didn't get it. An hour off work. In other words, just enough time to go through what you had to go through. There was literally no accounting for emotions there at all. It literally was physical time, right? But did you find it easy to talk to people around you or those close to you, Fiona, about your loss? And do you feel that they got that?
My family got that. Mm. My partner at the time got it. But other people didn't get it in the same way. As they would say, oh, you'll get over it, just get another one. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't get another one straight away. It wouldn't have replaced Smokey. It wouldn't have been fair on the new dog either, because I'd have kept thinking, it should be Smokey and Smokey's ways. And I think people didn't always understand it, didn't grasp it. In time, I did work with my manager to try to educate him about, people with dogs. And there was another colleague within the team who had a dog as well, who equally understood, I suppose, in some ways, but not. I don't think she got it, because he'd been with me for 14 years. Her dog was relatively new. I'd brought him, all my life revolved around him, holidays, everything. I looked for pet-friendly places, and it took a long time before a dog actually found me instead of me finding a dog. Mm-hmm. So I found another stray dog that was actually abandoned, and I took him in, and that was over a year later. And it took a lot to, hear the new ways and everything. But Smokey, still the other dog, that still was a large part of my life. I think of him still to the day when I see dogs similar to him.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Interesting insight. So good. Good we talked about it, because it, as I say, kind of gives a voice to your experience as well, Fiona.
People would call me the mad woman with the dog, but the dog has been such a big part of my life. He's always included, and he always will be. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't see. I mean, having, a strong emotional connection to a pet, and I talked a little earlier on about that, sort of that unconditional element of the love and the dependency, and it's a two-way relationship. I don't see anything. I think that's something
absolutely
to be celebrated. Like, as I say, it's not my thing at this time. Who's to say I could get a dog and get another dog, and I could feel the same emotions. I'm not saying that will never happen. Okay.
And I think people don't realise the joy they bring and the friendships you get from walking a dog, from meeting other people, getting out of the house. And even I had an injury and wasn't able to walk for a while, for a good period of time.
Yeah.
And even having the dog, I had to force myself to get out and walk with the dog.
Yes,
so
yes.
It just shows, they can be part of a recovery. There's so many positivities.
And there's a consistency with the relationship, isn't it? With humans, our feelings go up and down and they come in and out of our lives or whatever it might be. But providing this longevity and health, the relationship with your pet's consistent, isn't it? They're the ever-present.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they can tell. They can sense things straight away. Like at the moment, I've got a desk, Bichon Frise, and he can sense when he knows, if you're not happy or sad or something's going on, he can detect it quite quickly. And suddenly he's over with the paw tapping you. And, and suddenly if he was to die, that all goes from my life. He suddenly disappeared. And he's 13 now. So.
And Fiona, having gone through obviously the wonderful experience with Smokey, but then the terrible loss. Did you not consider sort of going... There's inevitability about this. If you live out your natural expected lifespan, Fiona, don't get me wrong. Sounds so morbid, but that that as you bring pets into your life, you are going to at some point say goodbye to them again. Did part of you sort of say, I can't go through that again? Not all the pleasure side of stuff, but the loss and the grief that you know is probably inevitable again.
I know, and that will be really hard to cope with at the time. But I think the benefits I gain from having a dog and the joy that dog gives me and I bring to the dog as well, and looking after him and caring for him, far outweighs, I think, the bereavement at the end. I don't know.
I suppose you're probably only able to really process that once you sort of come to terms with the loss of Smokey. I presume you couldn't sort of make that calculation in the immediate months afterwards. You know, about the benefit versus the sort of the sadness. Okay.
Absolutely. And within sort of weeks of Smokey passing, whatever, people were telling me about this dog was available and that dog was available. But it did take me over a year and maybe longer had this dog not arrived to me. You know, it was an abandoned dog and he'd been badly treated. Mm-hmm. And I took him actually to Rainbow to hand him in because I was going to London the next day. But I never stopped thinking about him. And just thought maybe this is a godsend. And I come back and I took him out of Rainbow. And he's been part of my life now for probably 12, 13 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay, brilliant stuff. All right, fantastic. And yet Smokey's still there as well.
There's still a picture of him up here. Yeah.
And I'm sure you've still got his collars and stuff as well. Or stuff that you associate with him. All right, Fiona, listen, thanks for your time.
I have his ashes. I go a step further, Greg. I have his ashes.
All right.
And my plan is when I pass away, he's going to come with me.
Why not?
With all my other dogs. So,
why not? Whatever makes you happy. Whatever makes you happy and brings you joy, that's okay with me.
That's it. Right. They bring me so much joy. And I must say, so many friendships from having dogs as well. So I meet every day when I'm on my walk. So, All right.
Take care, Fiona. Take care. Bye-bye. A texter says, Greg, we lost our dog a few months ago. She was knocked down, still missing her terribly. A trip to the clothesline will never be the same without her. As we've a farm, we need a dog. I don't really feel ready, but we have the most lovable dog now. That's lovely, isn't it? That actually kind of touched me in the feels there, that going out to the line, there was a wee routine of the dog running out there with you. Greg, the loss of an animal that you truly loved so dearly, it's totally devastating. I would love to have another dog, but no way would or could my heart take another loss again from the loss of a dog. The pain is so severe. Thanks, Anne-Marie. And Anne-Marie, maybe you listened to Fiona there. And, you know, I suppose it's like anything. And you could say the same of anything that we get, you know, or even having children. As a parent, there's always a fear that, God forbid, if something could happen. And I've been in the brain space in the past whereby I thought that, you know, the more children you have, the more risk something bad could happen, and it's just unimaginable, or whatever it might be. Our mind can work in strange ways. It's not for me to say, Anne-Marie, and you know yourself better, and you will never replace the dog that you loved, but you're not looking to overlap that love. You can extend love, can you not, to another pet? And would you deprive yourself of that companionship and that joy and the fun that you could have with another dog, anticipating the loss that might happen into the future? Because if you were to extend that, you could say, well, I might get a dog because it could be me that dies before the dog. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not telling you how you to think, Anne-Marie, of course, but we heard from Fiona there, a dog came into her life at the right time. At least try and keep your heart open for the possibility. I just don't want you to deprive yourself of 10 or 12 or 15 years of love and companionship from another dog because of the fear of loss. I don't think that's good for you, if that makes sense. Glen Swilly GA Club Bingo has been cancelled for tonight. Sadly, there's been a bereavement in the area. So out of respect, Glen Swilly GA Club Bingo is not going ahead tonight. A dog is a part of the family, says a caller. The vet wanted me to put my dog down, to put my dog to sleep 3 months ago. She has cancer and liver failure. I refused and put her on pain relief injections. She's not showing signs yet of suffering, but I know that the time will come when the decision to put her to sleep will have to be made. But if she's not suffering, I will keep getting her the pain relief. As I said, she's part of the family and she deserves the chance to feel loved and to feel wanted. All right, keep them coming in. We've kind of opened a thread there about pet love, pet ownership. Talk to us about the joy of your pet as well, by the way. If you want to share a story, or if it helps get it off your chest about the bereavement or loss, then we're more than happy to vent that for you here as well. Now, it's a very exciting time if you're into the Olympics, because they are just around the corner. And what a representation we in Donegal have on the Irish team. Sharon Madigan is lead scientist for Team Ireland and is joining us from Paris. Sharon?
Hey, Greg. How are you?
Good morning. How are you getting on?
Yes, not too bad. I'm hoping that we continue to have temperatures like we have in Donegal
Yes, of
in
course.
Paris for a while. That would be key.
What's your role as lead scientist, Sharon, with the team before we talk about some of the other members?
I suppose my role really is based in HQ within Team Ireland, with, I suppose, organizational responsibility for the scientists within the team, which would be physiology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, or the gym-based personnel, and also performance analysis. So it's a kind of a very wide-ranging, support team with performance, obviously, and good well-being and health being the cornerstone of what we're trying to do.
And you, of course, yourself, Sharon, from Donegal.
That's right. I'm from Letterkenny, and my background is in nutrition. So we've had a quick look around the canteen and the food hall, so it's looking good.
You've given them the thumbs up, have you?
Well, some of them, yes. Maybe some of them we'll see.
All right, okay. And this is, one of the biggest sporting events in the world. The opening ceremony takes place on Friday the 26th, setting off a 2.5 week festival of sport, which then concludes on Sunday the 11th of August. We've 23 athletes at the Games. The track and field events take place in Stade de France. The marathon events are running through the streets of Paris, starting at the Hôtel de Ville and finishing at the Esplanade des Invalides. I don't know, sounds about right anyway. So some of the Donegal names involve Mark English, of course. He has had a fantastic season from Finn Valley AC, and we'll be keeping a close eye, of course, on Mark.
Yeah, I think we have two Donegal Athletics athletes along with the team manager, Teresa McDade. And then we also have representation in badminton as well. So the whole team is over 130 athletes in total across a range of different sports. But yeah, we have representation, in a couple of sports anyway, which
My
is
apologies,
great.
I got that figure out. Rachel and Daniel McGee in the badminton,
Yeah,
of
that's
course.
right. Daniel is the performance director in badminton as well.
Kelly McGrory from down my
That's
neck of the
right.
woods.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it was great.
and there's a Donegal connection too with the Norway team. John
Tell me
Kelly.
more.
Sorry, I thought John Kelly is a coach with Norway from Finn Valley.
Very good,
Oh,
very
there you
good.
go.
Well,
Okay.
I'm not. We're actually quite close to the Swiss team, the Belgian team, and France is literally across. We will see the French medal ceremonies from our terrace,
Brilliant.
because they have the team house just literally beside us. So we have actually a really good pitch within the village, very close to everything. But I mean, you can imagine the excitement that will be around the French house if they bring medals as well.
Sure. What's the mood, Sharon, in the team? Because, you have to sort of soak it up, don't you? You have to have the experience, but you can't let that... you can't run away with that either. You have to watch what you're eating, your preparation, your sleep. So it's all business, but then there is the ceremony, and again, you don't want to lose the occasion either. So it's a tough old balance to strike for these athletes and other sporting people, because obviously too, there's going to be a bit of nerves and anxiety for some of them as well.
100%. I mean, I suppose there's a couple of things. Lots of these athletes are old hand, want of a better word. So there are some experienced heads within the team, and that's fantastic. We have a couple of returning medalists from Tokyo coming back. They'll still be nervous, and I think that's probably some of the stuff that drives them as well. And they'll be great role models for younger athletes who will come in to the setup for the first time. I mean, the village is an amazing place. You could be walking down the street and bump into, famous faces. I'm sure people will be looking for them. I think the interesting thing is, because of the variety of different sports, you've got sports that will finish relatively early.
Yeah.
So for example, rugby sevens will actually kick off before the opening ceremony and will be finished relatively quickly. So they will have an opportunity, I suppose, to compete relatively early and then to obviously soak up the atmosphere around the village. We actually have an association with the Irish Cultural center in the center of Paris as well. So some of our athletes will then have the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with their families, with their friends, and stay on in Paris actually after their competition has finished. So athletes get the opportunity of staying in the village for a couple of days after they compete. And then, because we have a real performance focus, those athletes then are given the opportunity to stay on in Paris for as long as they want. Some sports actually will have competition on later on in August, so some of them will actually disappear to go to other competitions. And then some sports, they stay throughout the entirety of the competition. So boxing will start on the 27th of July, the day after the opening ceremony. And actually, I think the last potential bout, which fingers crossed, Ireland will have some, obviously boxing is something that's close to my heart, but also in terms of performance, it's close to Ireland's heart with numbers of medals that we've got in the past. So that continues throughout the whole of the competition. So those boxers will have to put their heads down, put their earphones in at night, and get their sleep and rest as well.
That's just in case any of you are listening. Now, also too, it's a team, right? And with loads of different disciplines, and I presume it's all they all draw off each other, don't they, to some extent? Like, say, for instance, obviously the Athletics Ireland team did really well in the European Championships, and there are, I'm not just highlighting them, but there are other successes that we've had in recent while. I presume that energizes the whole team, because, as I say, they're all doing different stuff, but they are a team.
Absolutely. I mean, this is Team Ireland. And the it is, I suppose, one of the opportunities that lots of athletes have of coming together as multi-sports. World Championships in athletics is athletics, World Championships in boxing is boxing, World Championships in rowing is rowing. So you have the opportunity to I suppose meet and chat and network with like-minded people, and they are very focused. And I suppose one of the things here is that the games have kind of been split up a little bit, in that we have golf, which is based out near Versailles, along with track cycling and equestrian. And then on the opposite side of Paris, we have rowing, and actually we have sailing down in Marseille. And there are a number of sports scattered around not only Paris but also France. So there is a little bit of different places that
disjointed a wee
the
bit, so
team, but actually those team members also have the opportunity to come into the village if they want to
Brilliant.
for a period of time to actually soak up that atmosphere as well.
Okay, maybe I'm being parochial here, but between you, Sharon, and the rest of the Donegal representation, it does feel like we punch above our weight in our little corner of Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to see, and it's been something that I think we had a Letterkenny contingent even in Tokyo at the last games. There was definitely a Letterkenny cup of tea and coffee every morning for sure. So, I mean, it's always great, and absolutely, we definitely had that Donegal element of things. I'm a bit disappointed because usually we would definitely aim to get the Donegal games on the TV here, and unfortunately we'll not be
No.
able to do that. But I think we have a couple of other Armagh and Galway individuals that I'm sure will be vying for the TV.
Yeah, well, and in the other direction too, we still have some maybe celebrating to do as fans before the end of the summer. If it's not going to be football, why can't it be in the ring or on the running track or
Absolutely.
whatever? Lovely stuff, Sharon. Thank you very much for your time. That's Sharon Madigan there, lead scientist for Team Ireland. Very proud of her, of course, to reach that stage of her career, and also the rest of the crew as well. Okay, that's where we have to leave it. We're live from Anagri tomorrow, all being well. Stay tuned. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest live from Buncrana Credit Union with all the usual stuff after we take a break for the news.